I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with Aaron Margarighi, a partner at law firm Foley Lardner. Aaron is also co-chair of the American Telemedicine Association's Health Data Workgroup Privacy Committee, where he led the creation of the ATA's health data privacy principles that ensure that telehealth practices meet standards for patient safety, data privacy, and information security. So, Aaron, what are some of the top privacy and security issues that the ATA and the telehealth industry are watching in 2025 and why?
If I had to break it down into some main priorities that the ATA is focused on, first and foremost, would be sort of the sort of onslaught of consumer privacy health laws that are coming out in the various states. Specifically, ATA and many in the digital health industry are very focused on the New York bill that is currently sitting or waiting to be reviewed by the governor of New York. And is a sort of expansion over the typical consumer health privacy laws we've seen. And apart from that, the ATA is also steadfastly focused on AI and the integration of AI and what that means from a privacy and security perspective.
So, Aaron, you mentioned the New York State legislation. And what I understand is that the ATA's position is that it could create a chilling effect on patient access and engagement with telehealth services. Why? And I know that this law has, some restrictions that we haven't seen before, at least in New York State.
I think a little bit of background is helpful in terms of the law and what is being proposed. If I had to sort of break it down into three digestible concepts, I think the first is it's a fairly large expansion of the concept of regulated health information. So New York is seeing itself sort of as picking up the slack where HIPAA leaves off. So, it includes in the definition of regulated health information, an individual's wellness habits or their search histories. There's really not a nexus that's necessary. As long as it's sort of tangentially related to health information, this New York bill, the way it's currently proposed, reads that it is regulated health information if it sort of has some connection to an individual's health care. I think the other big departure that we see from some of these other comprehensive consumer health privacy laws is really, while there is a carve out or an exemption for protected health information as it's defined by HIPAA, there's not a carve out for those entities that are regulated by HIPAA and have to follow HIPAA's privacy, security, and breach notification rules. And so really what we see is already regulated entities having to sort of further move the needle even more to comply with this NY HIPAA law, especially in the places where companies may take the position that not all of the information that they maintain is protected health information. And then, unlike the other sort of similar laws out there, and when I say similar laws, I'm really thinking about the My Health, My Data Act in Washington. There is no carve out for financial institutions or banks or other sort of vendors in the supply chain that are also heavily regulated in other areas, whereas HIPAA and some of these other state laws have provided exemptions for processing that, for example, payment processing or credit card processing, those types of activities that happen day in and day out and are really not, connected to the healthcare transaction that's occurring. So the explosion and sort of expansion of regulated health information is really the first bucket of information that New York HIPAA sort of is I guess expanding from other prior privacy laws. The second bucket is really who's regulated by this law, this proposed law. And the answer really, quite frankly, is it could be everyone. You have your typical resident of the state, so New York residents, and anyone that processes the data of a New York resident is regulated by NY HIPAA, as well as individuals that may be visiting New York or in New York. While those individuals are physically located in New York, those individuals' information will be subject to NY HIPAA. And then the last one is sort of this catch-all, and really it's, could be read a lot of different ways, but the way I read it is that any organization that's in New York and processes regulated health information. And the way I read that is that, you could be somebody from Florida like myself, but if I'm, working with a company that's based in New York, my information all of a sudden becomes regulated by this NYHIPAA law. And so, sort of we now have an expansion of what is regulated health information and, secondarily, an expansion of who is regulated by this law, which is sort of the, I think, the most expansive definition of a regulated entity that we've seen across the country. And then the final big bucket of expansion from HIPAA and from the other state consumer privacy laws that we've seen is really this concept of processing and authorization. The authorization requirements for NYHIPAA are pretty stringent, but I think what's most notable is really what the entity that collects the information initially is permitted to do. And really, it's very limited. So the entity that collects the individual or the consumer's health information is only allowed to use that information to provide the services that the individual is signing up to receive. And that's strictly, strictly tailored per the language in the proposed bill. The regulated entity is allowed to use that health information for its internal business needs. And you can think about, sort of that definition as purely internal from the perspective of accounting and legal and HR. And then there's sort of what you would typically see in terms of processing allowances for legal requirements, legal obligations, or patient safety is the best way to put it. And what I'll say is that most notable part of this is not what is allowed to be done, it's what's not allowed to be done. And NYHIPAA has taken the steps to expressly prohibit any type of marketing, advertising, research and development, any of those requirements that companies do day in and day out, even companies regulated by HIPAA, in order to, sort of get the message out about the services they provide and engage with patients and provide alternatives for different mediums of healthcare. All of this information would only be able to be used for those sort of purposes with valid authorization. And valid authorization under NYHIPAA will be a huge mountain to climb for entities. Number one, there is a requirement that after the user comes to the website or opens the app and initiates, maybe an intake or a onboarding workflow, the only processing that can be done at that time is those strictly necessary processing rights that the company that we just spoke about. The company will then have to wait 24 hours to obtain authorization from that individual and obtain their permission to either market or advertise or to use their information for research and development. A lot of things that are taken for granted in sort of today's, sort of digital health driven environment. So
So where this would affect potentially telehealth or remote patient monitoring, how would that potentially impact those sorts of activities?
yeah, so I think that the first most obvious issue is that you're starting to have entities that are even broader than the digital health ecosystem that'll be brought into the requirements to comply with this law. And so companies that don't necessarily see themselves as healthcare companies all of a sudden will be, forced to segregate and keep information separately because of the requirements to comply with NYHIPAA. In the telehealth industry specifically, though, really so much of telehealth is, there's a foundational aspect of creating patient engagement, and patient engagement happens virtually in the telehealth world. And so without the ability to immediately engage with an individual as to the various options and resources that our telehealth companies can provide them and the different places where telehealth can meet the patient, you run into a issue where there's going to be this large sort of barrier to engagement, because ultimately, if I go to a telehealth website and say I'd like to have an appointment on February 28th with Dr. So and so, the reading of this law essentially states that the appointment with, Dr. McGee on February 28th is the only reason that that telehealth company can process my information. The telehealth company wouldn't be able to reach out for 24 hours and ask if I want to hear about other great opportunities to engage in healthcare or other great patient education activities that, really help, get the word out as to why telehealth is a great alternative or a great option to sort of a traditional brick and mortar setting. And so from really the, you mentioned the chilling effect at the top of the call. The chilling effect is that not only will you not be able to engage immediately with these individuals for any reason that is not directly related to the initial intake and reason for the consumer coming to the website, you'll have to wait 24 hours to reach out or to even get the individual back to your website and say, look, we also offer this great service. And that's sort of a wide-ranging issue for companies that may provide, sort of a wide variety of services, right? And so getting a hold of somebody 24 hours after they left your website, always, not always the easiest. Secondly, to obtain valid authorization, the telehealth company is going to have to engage with the user and provide them a list of all of the ways that the telehealth company wants to process their information. So if Dr. McGee wants to advertise to Aaron that Dr. McGee also provides behavioral health services as well as other behavioral health treatment opportunities, Dr. McGee will have to reach out, provide me a list that includes advertising as one of the reasons that information will be processed. I, as the user, will then have to click that box and say, great, I'd like to hear about other opportunities that Dr. McGee has. While this bill is still sort of in a proposed format and there's not a lot of sort of detail behind the way it would be enacted, one of the big concerns, and I think this kind of stretches across the telehealth industry as a whole, is that the use and processing of regulated health information to either do research or development or improve a platform, is significantly hampered by this law, because that is another sort of category that an individual would have to affirmatively consent or provide authorization to the telehealth company so that that information can be used to improve the platform, improve the patient experience. And so really, off the top of your head, right there, you have two very limiting components of this proposed bill. One, which will directly impact the patient immediately because they won't be able to hear about all of the great opportunities that, Dr. McGee and her telehealth company have and can offer. And secondly, it'll impact the patient in the long run because the information that digital health companies typically rely on to help improve patient experience, help improve patient workflow, help improve these great platforms, that information, the user will also have to authorize the telehealth company to use that information for those purposes. So there's a very immediate impact, and there's also a long-term impact that we have to worry about.
So, Aaron, aside from the New York law that's sort of pending here, what are some of the other top privacy and security issues that you're watching right now in telehealth and remote patient monitoring? Especially since, COVID, those sort of activities really took off. Where do things stand right now in terms of what you're recommending entities that are involved with telehealth and remote patient monitoring, what are you telling them to keep their eyes on?
Most companies in the digital health industry and the telehealth industry, and specifically in the remote patient monitoring sort of area, they're very focused on AI. And so for a long time during the Biden administration, we sort of had this executive order which talked about responsible AI and transparent AI. And with the incoming new administration, we saw a reversal of sort of, or I guess a wholesale sort of retraction of those AI principles. And so really the question becomes, what are RPM companies and digital health companies allowed to do with this sort of treasure trove of data it has, or that they collect with respect to their patients and what they're monitoring? And the answer really is, we look back at HIPAA, which is sort of a, for lack of a better way of putting it, a 30 plus year old law that really never expected that there would be this sort of new and expansive data set that exists and can be used for all kinds of different uses and improvements and sort of statistic tracking, things that really help move the needle in terms of personal healthcare outcomes. Really, what I think the question I get most is, hi, I'm an RPM vendor. I provide RPM services for medical groups and healthcare providers. I'm a business associate. What can I do with the data? And my answer is, well, you can do what those covered entities, those healthcare providers say that you're allowed to do. HIPAA is very strict with how a service provider can use data. And so service providers are the ones that are out there in a lot of ways making these technologies available and improving these technologies. And then they're also the ones that are now integrating AI and using, the great power that AI brings, and they're unable to use the data for that purpose, right? And so it's really what I see as sort of a huge issue that, I think the ATA is tackling and really focused on from a data sort of usability perspective. The more data that we provide access to in a safe, private, and secure manner, the better our technology is going to get, the more improved our outcomes are going to become. And so RPM companies are typically steadfastly focused on, how can I use the data? What is permitted to be done with de-identified data versus identifiable data? And, the answer typically is, it lies in your agreement. And I think one of the things that, I hope in the near future we come to, especially as AI continues to grow and become an everyday part of our lives, is that data usability becomes a feature in any of these comprehensive laws that come out that allow these great companies that are emerging and bringing new technologies to be able to use that data and really to help sort of create a better healthcare ecosystem for patients and, organizations and providers alike.
Thanks, Aaron. I've been speaking to Aaron Margarighi. I'm Mary Ann Kolbasek-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.